Mr. Tasky. The Antic Files. Episode 7.
Welcome once again to another episode of
Wait, can I say it?
Sure.
Welcome to another episode of Inversatasky, The Antic Files.
Good job. I'm your host, Wade, and that was Allison. This is episode 7, which means it's issue number 7. This is from April of 1983, volume 2, number 1. This issue marks the start of the monthly distribution, and it has been 1 year since the magazine started. The subject of this issue is games. The price was $2.50. There are 136 pages cover to cover and 76 advertisers. On the news front, this is the first episode post-exploration of the podcast. That means I'm committing to this for the foreseeable future. Hooray! The backdrop on the cover of this issue is deep space with stars and galaxies all over. There is a large 3-tier white birthday cake with pink lace icing and a large single candle at the top, which is burning. There are pink Atari Fuji symbols wrapped around each tier of the cake.
How is it possible for a candle to be burning if there is virtually no oxygen in space?
Luckily, there is a man in a space suit and a jetpack flying toward and firing a laser at the flame to solve the dilemma. There is also a spaceship in the bottom left that is flying toward the cake. In the center on the left, in a yellow script font, it says Games Issue. At the bottom right, in the same font, it says Now Monthly. Diagonally, in a yellow band with black text in the upper right corner, it says Cover Art Contest. On the upper left is the Antic logo in bright red with a dark red shadow, and near the edge of the lowest tier of the cake is Tim Boxall's credit. The cover of this issue scan was pretty rough. I did a lot of healing to it for the website, but it's still not great. The website does have a cover art gallery of the Antic issues. If you haven't checked it out, you should. The editorial in this issue announces Antic's first year birthday and becoming a monthly publication. It also announces some changes, such as using a custom typeface for program listings. The typeface contains all the Atasky characters, but it's not the bitmap one that I remember the most. It also lists some accomplishments, such as 1. Being one of the first magazines to include the typo feature. 2. They are also the only magazine to place their original programs in the public domain. 3. They've grown in pages and advertisers in every issue. Check, noticed that. And 4. They have been on time with every issue. It also mentions the addition of the profiles section, which is aimed at introducing you to the people that make great games and useful software. Also, they will be adding color photos to reviews. Expensive, but worth it, in their own words, and 100% agreed. And remember, if you own an Atari computer, you should be reading Antic. We'll talk about ads first. Right up front, there is a 2 full-page color ad from Atari for the 1200XL. I'm sure you've seen this. It's the one that says only in the upper left in giant text, then has a couple of paragraphs underneath, which continue to the top of the second page. On the lower portion of the right side page, it has a picture of the 1200XL in full color. Across the bottom of both pages, in very large text, it says, the new Atari 1200XL, with home computer half the size in gray underneath that. Next, Programmers Institute has a full-page monochrome ad. This one gives 4 smart ways to make your insert computer model here more intelligent. Each reason is a column and a table with paragraphs about them, including the prices. The first is the color accountant. This was featured on Inversatasky in Season 1, Episode 15, and there's a link in the show notes. The second is the tax handler, which are tax forms for 1040 long, Schedule A, and Schedule G. It doesn't say that it needs a spreadsheet to function. Sounds like an early TurboTax type program to me. The third, and this is why I mentioned the ad, I've seen this one before as a quarter page ad and almost mentioned it. It is for the Magnetic magazine, which is described much like Antic or Analog might be, and includes a diskette or cassette each month with 4 to 7 quality programs. 1 year on cassette is $50. That's $152.05 today, while subscribing to disc is $75, which is $228.07 today. A half a year on cassette is $30, $91.23 today, while a half year on disc is $45, $136.84 today. So you save a little on the yearly subscription. If you want just a sample issue to see what you're getting into, on cassette it is $10, which is $30.41 today, while the disc sample is $15, and that's $45.61 today. And the fourth way is for the Learning Center, which is an education program for 3 to 9-year-olds. It sounds like they've got their reasons covered. Next is Atari Computer Camps, which has a quarter page ad. And it's not just another summer camp, is the slogan. There is a Polaroid-type picture in the center with a boy and a girl working on a 1200XL with excitement on their faces. Learning is part of the fun. It's co-ed for ages 10 to 16, and you don't need to have computer skills, and you can go for 2, 4, or 8 weeks at a time. It also has traditional camp activities. Can I go? Next up, I've seen this one a couple of times now, but opted not to mention it, and I'm mentioning it now this time because it's intriguing. It's a full-page monochrome ad for Micro Mainframe. This is a floppy disk system for less than $450, which is $1,368.40 today, assuming that it's less than one penny, and it has quite the feature list. Double density without patches to DOS, Centronics parallel port, a 4K print spooler built-in that's expandable up to 54K. It supports double-sided and 8-inch floppy drives, which says it requires MaxiDOS, which is to be available in mid of 1983, and supports MMF hard disk expansion drives. Additional drives can be added for less than $300, which is $912.26 today. It also has an expansion box that turns the drive into a full 64K Z80 computer, allowing you to use the Atari as a color terminal and run CPM software, or TRS-80 Model 2 software, and Oasis software, which gives some multi-user ability. Pretty neat. The next ad I'll mention is from Software Publishers Incorporated, which has a half-page monochrome ad for the ATR 8000. This is a 4 MHz Z80 processor with 64K RAM and includes double-density CPM 2.2. The device has 5 ports, RS-232 serial, floppy disk, which supports up to 4, 5.25, or 8-inch drives, a parallel printer interface, peripheral out for other Atari peripherals, and a computer in which connects to the Atari. Those last two are SIO. It sells for $750, which is $2,281 today. And 5.25-inch drives are $399.95, which are $1,216.23 today. That's a little on the high end. You have to call about the 8-inch drives, though. I noticed in the bottom corner it says there is an expansion called the CoPower 88, which is an 8088 coprocessor, but you have to call about that as well. I didn't realize the full extent to which this device was capable, and there's a picture of it with 2 5.25-inch drives and 2 8-inch drives. Very cool, but expensive. This is the last ad, I promise. And this one is for MPP, or MicroBits Peripheral Products, which is a half-page monochrome ad introducing the MPP 1100 parallel printer interface and MPP 1000 modem. Neither of these need the Atari 850 interface module, and the printer interface is priced at $99.95, which is $303.94 today, and the modem is $199.95, which is $608.04 today. Okay. The first feature I'm going to discuss is called Mama's Boy by Richard Kushner. This feature article is not what you think based on the title. Mama, in this case, stands for Middle-Aged Maze Addict. This article is a look at maze games, and he somewhat defines Pac-Man as the quote-unquote standard. I couldn't agree more. He talks about similar games and what makes them different, and has a few requests for game designers, but I don't like the one about continuing at some higher level post-final death. Not for a maze game, anyway. That's part of what makes Pac-Man a great game. If you have damp palms, tension ache in the shoulders, a sore wrist, and are always on the search for the perfect joystick, you might be a mama's boy or girl, too. The next feature is called Anatomy of an Atari by Richard Herring. This feature article is a teardown of the Atari 800, complete with pictures. It describes component locations and what they're responsible for. Color would have been a great addition for these pictures, but sadly they're all in grayscale. The next feature is called Profiles by Robert Dewitt. This department article features an interview with Ihor Walasenko. He is a partner and co-founder of Synapse Software, the originator of File Manager 800 and File Manager Plus, as well as many games. He is Austrian with Ukrainian parents. His family migrated to the U.S. after World War II. He studied psychology, specifically neuro-linguistic programming, and was counseling clients and holding workshops when he discovered computers. He got an Atari computer because the Apple couldn't play Star Raiders. He had met Ken Grant, his partner at Synapse, and Ken showed him a database that he had written. Ihor was using it to support his practice, but it kept failing. He talked to Ken about fixing it, and they decided to form a company for it. And that was the birth of File Manager 800. The article goes into more history of Synapse that I won't bore you with. He did note that Seamus was the product that signaled a drastic change in Synapse sales for the good. The interview took place about 2 weeks before Pharaoh's Curse was released, and I liked both of those games a lot, specifically Pharaoh's Curse. Ihor states that all products are developed internally. In 1982, they were selling $500,000 to $1 million worth of products per month. What does he want to do after computers? He wants to write children's books and perhaps make movies. The next feature is called Starting Line by Mark Grice. This department article was left out of the index. It is titled Voyeur, The Case of the Homely Cousin. Yeah, that sounds strange, and maybe I know why now. Let's see. The title comes from an analogy used to help drive home a point about being fixed up with his sister-in-law's homely cousin. Not my words, and this was in 1983, so don't cancel me. I didn't say it. In the article, he describes why using peek and poke is better than using related basic statements that sometimes do the same things, sort of like set color and sound. The next feature is called Inside Atari. This department article is broken into two parts. The first is about APX Star Award winner. It explains the process, which narrowed a field of 12 prize-winning programs down to 4 finalists and selecting the winner. The grand prize winner gets $25,000, which is $76,024 today. The 4 vying for the win are Advanced Music System by Lee Actor, Galahad and the Holy Grail by Douglas Crawford, Astrology by Harry Coons and Art Prag, and Typo Attack by David Bueller.
Say Ferris.
Wrong Bueller. Typo Attack won while David was a high school junior. Typo Attack was featured on Inversitaski in Season 1, Episode 17, and there's a link in the show notes. The second part is about Atari's My First Computer, which is a keyboard expansion for the VCS, Atari 2600. It's slated to have 8K and expandable to 32K, built-in BASIC, raised button keys, which sort of look like chiclet-style keyboard, and an expansion port for disk and printer peripherals. Right away, you can use a standard cassette recorder with it, and it's supposed to be less than $90. I heard about the keyboard before, but didn't realize the scope that was planned for it. There are pictures here if you're interested, and apparently there were also plans for a 5200 keyboard, and I never knew that either. The next feature is the cover art contest. This feature article is the announcement of, well, a cover art contest. One lucky winner will have their artwork plastered on the cover of Atari later in the year.
What is the catch?
The catch? You have to create it using an Atari program such as MicroPainter, Paint, or VersaWriter. And you relinquish all rights to it to Antic. Make sure you don't put Antic anywhere on it. And first prize is $300, which is $912 today. The runners-up get software. Next up is Trace Utility by Alan Filipski. This feature article presents a basic type-in program that will act as a trace utility for your own BASIC programs. It's a debugging tool for BASIC. The submission is from a reader who answered Antic's challenge in issue number 4. He was awarded with a copy of BASIC A+ from OSS, and the article goes into great detail about how to use this utility and how it works. Hint, there's a lot of clever trickery going on. I created a small program to test with it, and indeed it does work, but it can get tricky to decipher if your program does any positional text printing or clear screens. There's some screenshots on the website. Next up is Dragon Smoke by Bob Albrecht and George Firedrake. This department article is titled Game Master's Apprentice. In here, they present their answer to the Scrabble Word Score Challenge and present other ways it can be used. In relation to the title, they talk about having the computer roll up characters for fantasy role-playing games, like Dungeons & Dragons, using the 3D6 method. They challenge you to write your own programs. They also pose an additional challenge for the Wordsmith program you created, adding sound to play a tune based on the word's letter values. This issue is before I had subscribed, and I don't recall seeing much of what's been presented thus far. I do remember typing in a Dungeons & Dragons character roller. Maybe I found it in the next issue or their answer to the challenge. I don't recall. Next is Window on GTIA by Jerry White. This feature article describes how the new GTIA chip works. It provides an explanation as to why they are only designed to work in full screen mode, which is because the GTIA modes are not handled by Antic, but by the GTIA chip itself. Thus, the Antic display lists aren't applicable. At least that's how I read it, and hopefully that's right. The article presents a basic type-in that manipulates a GTI screen to have a 4-line graphic zero window by fooling the hardware and fooling BASIC. So, a graphic zero window inside a graphic zero. The next feature is Atari Print Font by Jerry White. And this feature article presents a basic type-in program that prints a character map to the printer for any font. It's useful in case you've created multiple redefined symbols in the font and can't remember which letters you attach them to. It prints them in 8x8 character cells with an asterisk representing each bit, and there are some screenshots and a printout on the website. Next up is Antic Picks 10 by Deborah Burns. This feature article is a list of the top 10 games the editors consider to be the most popular, interesting, and valuable from the last year. There are mini reviews for each, as well as color screenshots. They are not ranked, just listed. They are Defender, Minor 2049er, Seamus, Gorf, Preppy, Eastern Front, Deadline, Choplifter, Canyon Climber, and Crazy Antics. This list tracks about 80% for me. I wasn't a big fan of Gorf or Crazy Antics. Next, Pilot Your Atari by Ken Harms. This department article presents an autoload menu written in Pilot. This one is a little special in that it draws a face and animates it as if it were speaking when prompting to run each program. It uses a companion program written in BASIC to create the autorun file. The listing is almost 3 pages double column. I took a chance at entering it since this issue uses a new font that's easier to read, though it's still not ideal. The BASIC putter program worked to create the autorun sys file, and that looks like it wanted to run pilot commands at boot, so good news. I spent about 1.5 hours typing in the pilot code and troubleshooting it. The new print font is still to blame. you can't tell how many spaces are in a string. So I had some tweaking of the program to get things presented correctly. I can say that after reading these and entering or perusing the listings, I think I'm becoming fluent in Pilot.
Just tell them, Ken sent me.
Thanks, Ken. Next up is In the Public Domain by David Bolk. This department article presents a 3D maze game where you must escape in the shortest time possible. It's in BASIC and it's ready to type in. It has an intro sound that is some very fast random noise. Then it plays a tune while it's building the maze in memory and drawing a representation on screen. And finally, when you enter the maze, it plays some slower random noise. And there are some screenshots on the website. The next article is Education by Linda Schreiber. This department article is titled Alpha Blocks. This presents a concentration type game written in BASIC, and it's designed for kids. The twist is that these are not cards, they are blocks, like a toddler might play with, and the alphabet is hidden. You score points by finding the matches in correct alphabetical order. It's about 2 pages and 3 columns of program listing, and I didn't type it in because I wasn't too interested in the game. The next feature is Supercharging BASIC by Bob Stewart. This feature article discusses using assembler to augment BASIC to speed up your programs. Bob presents a BASIC program called Charger, which takes your assembly object file and converts it to lines that can be included in a BASIC program. The article explains how it all works and breaks down the code. It also tells you of some problems to look out for and how to work around them, such as where to locate the assembly code in memory. And there's an example to learn from. The next feature is called Assembly Language by Sheila Spencer. This department article presents a BASIC program to disassemble machine code in memory. It's a very long listing with a lot of lines that look very input error prone. The next feature is called Fourth Factory by John Peters. This department article gives you a couple of new fourth words. As I'm starting to understand more fourth, words are like functions. The words here create a 25-line display and display the stack contents. While I'm talking about fourth, Val PAR International has an ad immediately following the article, and it did as well in another issue. This ad is for Val Fourth and several of their other Val wares. Val Fourth sells for $45, which is $136.84 today, so that's not a bad price. The next feature is called Tape Topics by Carl Evans. This department article is titled Schematic. He presents the schematic for his Atari 410 program recorder, and he admits there may be differences in the ones that Atari has sold. He also tells you how to improve the reliability by changing a few resistors in the feedback loops of the 2 active filters. In addition to the schematic is also a parts list of the electrical components needed. And the last feature for this issue is Typo Revisited by Bill Wilkinson. This feature article revisits the original Typo program presented in Antic number 3. It has been a while since it appeared, and this is the program listing and usage instructions basically repeated. It doesn't appear to have changed yet, and I remember using Typo 2 a lot. I'm looking forward to the issue which presents that version. A few miscellaneous bits to discuss. First, there is a guide to Antic Volume 1 in this issue. It lists the articles that have been presented for the last 6 issues, who the author is, and what issue it is in, and also what page number. It's broken down by feature and department name, and as a bonus, there is a list of new products and product reviews indexed as well. Next up, I noticed a tiny ad on page 72. It's framed as a question with an attention at the top. Atari 800 owners with three 16K memory boards. Question: how do you squeeze two Atari memory boards into one memory slot to have an open slot? Is it A, use a hammer, B, pliers, C, the mosaic adapter, or D, weld them together, or E, none of the above?
Welding sounds fun.
It does sound fun, but the correct answer is the mosaic adapter. This adapter accepts the RAM chips from two Atari RAM boards. Neat. Next, the new product section mentions a game I actually bought and enjoyed playing a lot. It's from Tronix, and it's called Kid Grid. This is a really fun game where you have to fill in all the blocks of a grid on the screen, similar to Quicks, and avoid the four bullies that are chasing you around the screen. I had forgotten they have names, such as Squash Face, Thuggy, Muggy, and Moose. I had this on cassette and had to wait for it to load every time I wanted to play. Also in the new product section is Bank Street Rider from Broderbund. This is a simple word processor. It was featured on Inversitaski in Season 6, Episode 1, and there's a link in the show notes. A quick reminder on feedback. If you want to relay any stories relevant to Antic Magazine or any of the products mentioned, I'd certainly like to hear about it. My contact information is on the website. I'd like to give a special thanks to Zane Little for the track The Cool Factor from the album Another Bag of Chips, which is used in the opening sequence, and I'd like to thank you for continuing to support me in this endeavor.